Okay, we are on page Kuf Lamed Beis. In the Hebrew, it starts with Noskalos and Besoifen. Vekacha is the first word, about a little less than halfway down the page. In the English, the line starts, it is likewise at the culmination of the Kav, on the top quarter of the right-hand column. So at this point, the Alter Rebbe's premise over here is that Ihu v'chayu chad, Ihu v'garmehu chad, that in the world of Aseels, in the world of emanation, Hashem is one with the vitality, and Hashem is one with the vessels by which the vitality is being conveyed. And we've been talking and bouncing back and forth this idea of the creation process, and how it is that Hashem, in somewhat detail, how it is that Hashem is actively involved with the creation process. So the last thing that he talked about is this, there's this expression of, the last thing we talked about was dirt. And the power of growth, which is contained in the earth, is an expression of Malchus of Atzilus. It is the creative aspect of Hashem. That's what the Malchus of Atzilus means, the creative aspect of Hashem, which encloses itself into the physical dirt, so, and that contains an infinite power, such that you could grow anything, and then by putting the seed in the ground, so that limits the infinite potential and to whatever that seed is, and then there's a relationship between the power of growth and the seed rots away, leaving basically nothing, and from that little germ which is left, comes the entire new plant. Mm-hmm. And Hashem did this, if you say that, what? The very bottom contains in it the vitality from the highest levels. And that says that it has to be that way, because in order for the godliness to get down so low, it has to be really high quality godliness, and therefore the highest quality of godliness is actually in dirt. So he says, Kachahu b'siyam ha-kav, do'orin se baruchu m'stayim b'siyam ha-yoshu d'ragli da'ak. So it says it's also the same thing also with the kav. The Arizal talks about the creation process, that into the first contraction, which is called Tzimtzum HaGadol, or Tzimtzum HaRishon, which means the first contraction, which there was a removal of Hashem's infinite revelation. So into that revealed finiteness was introduced a measured amount of infinity, and that measured infinity is referred to as the Kav, which means a measuring rod, and is based on the vision of Yechezkel, that Yechezkel in chapter 40, I think it's also earlier, but I'm not sure, that Yechezkel is picked up in a vision, and he's taken to the Temple Mount. This is in chapter 40, and by a man made out of copper, specifically. And the copper man has a measuring rod by which he delineates all the measurements of what's going to be the third base of Mikdash. That's what Yechezkel's prophecy is. So there he calls it measuring rod. He calls it a kav hamida, which means a measuring rod. And the Arizal, whoever it was who picked up on it, introduced this concept, refers to that limited amount of infiniteness, or that measured amount of infiniteness, as also a kav amida, a measured amount of this ray of godliness. For the most part, though, it's not called kav amida. For the most part, it's just called kav. Okay, sometimes it's referred to as kav v'chut, which means like the rod and the thread, but it's the same. They're all the same. It's not like in other instances where you have different names that are ascribed to different things. It refers to different aspects of it. I've never seen that there's a difference between kav amida, kav v'chut, and kav.
They're all
as far as I have seen. That there's like, it's not like different levels of kav. You could say that the kav amida refers to the bottom of the kav, and the kav refers to the middle of the kav, and the kav achud at the top of the kav. You could make such quorum doshas, but I never saw such a thing.
In this instance, though, kav, when we're talking about measure,
the word measure in this case means just means limitation.
Yeah, limited infinity. Yes, right, limited godliness. Yes,
but
you could say a measured amount.
That's where I was going. Can there be an associated quantity?
It would have to be, because the quality remains the same.
Quality is the same.
The quality is infiniteness.
Right.
But it's a little bit of infiniteness. It's not the whole entire infiniteness.
So
you're talking, it's a quantitative...
It's a measured...
Quantitative expression,
yeah,
yes.
So it makes you wonder... I mean, it's not for a topic probably for this conversation, what is the measure? Do we know, or is it fathomable? Is it something that someone has discovered?
We have a problem because as soon as you say the word infinity, our brains go tilt.
Yeah,
we have a practical example. In a 1-inch line on a ruler, there's an infinite amount of points in it, but
correct.
It's 1 inch.
Correct. It's still correct. Correct.
We've used that before.
Correct.
Yes.
Correct.
So do we know how much godliness is contained? Well, before he called it a ha'ara de ha'ara de ha'ara, a ray of godliness.
Right, right.
Still.
So that's a qualitative thing as well.
Yes.
So it's infinite, but it's really little itty bitty infinite.
Yeah.
As opposed to a whole big infinite.
Right.
Mm. Okay, so I've never thought about how much kav is there. I can tell you, it's just enough.
It's plenty enough. It's plenty enough. Plenty enough.
Because he says what happens to it. So it's Messiah Meyosha Deragli Da'ak. He's a little GPS coordinates over here.
Yeah.
And he says that it doesn't really. The kav, its initial stopping point, is at the bottom of Ak. Ak is an abbreviation for Adam Kadmon, which means primordial man, which means nothing when you're talking about actual terminology. But what Adam Kadmon is it's the point of tangency between Hashem's finite infiniteness, which is what this kav is, and the result of the first contraction, which is Hashem's infinite finiteness.
Right.
Okay, because when Hashem did the first, we talked about this last week and the week before, I'm not going to go again now, but the first step in the creation process is Hashem had to create limitation.
Yes.
Or in the case maybe reveal limitation.
Reveal limitation.
So the revealed limitation is infinite. It's an infinite amount of limitation. Introduced into the infinite amount of limitation is a finite amount of energy, which is a finite infiniteness.
Right.
The point of tangency between the two, the limitation and the infiniteness now, is called Adam Kadmai. That point of tangency contains within it the entire creation process in a state of potential. That's why it's called Adam. It's like with the zygote of creation. We've used this term before too. It contains in it every single detail that there is in the creation, but it's in a primordial state. Right. You know, Sejal?
Mankind, Bakal, or
creation?
Adam. No. Like the connection point is Adam Arishon, or
no. It's primordial, not first. The word primordial means lacking any type of substance. It's an amorphic state of godliness. It's nothing usable at that point because it's only just a potential of a potential at that point. So that's where you stop having something called a kav. Okay, but the Zohar says that the kav goes all the way down to Malchus of Atzilus. And then only that, but it's boikas, a parsa, it pierces through Malchus of Atzilus. And he said it before, he said it, three lessons ago, it becomes the Lamed Kalim of Malchus, which become the Neshama of Nefesh, Bri, Yetzir, and Asiyah. So what is it? So basically what it is that this energy, which was initially emitted, is supplying the life force of the entire creation, right down to every single physical organism. Okay, when it's all there, she says, Umer Mamata Lamaila Bivinus Ora Neshama de Malchus, the Malchus de Sia, as he says, that from there it goes all the way down and it shines and illuminates until it becomes the soul, the life force between the very bottom of the creation process, which he calls the level of Malchus, which is a letter create, the creative level, the creative level of the creator of the world of action, Shuhu Elokus Mamish, which can, it might be the lowest level in creation, but it's before the physical world was created. It's the source of the physical world, and therefore it is spiritual. But it's an external expression. Because where is it? How does the godliness come down into this world? Is an external expression of that very low level of godliness. That's all that's down here in this world. Well, that would have been a good place to stop last time, because that's the end of the sentence, actually. Okay, so the point being is that it's true that in Atzilus there is nothing, in the world of emanation, there is nothing but godliness. And it's true at that point. What makes Atzilus different than previous levels in the creation is the user-friendliness of the spheres of Atzilus, because now you could say you have God's kindness and God's wisdom and God's etc. Okay? But that user-friendliness has to come down now, because it is somewhat user-friendly. It's still in an infinite state, but it's user-friendly. So it now can relate to actual being used, which the actual utilization of godliness is in the, at the very bottom of the creation as it's manifest in this physical world. Which is interesting that he quotes his own sefer, but I don't think that's his sefer. I think that's... he's quoting his own sefer. Okay, now, so he's raising a question. Whatever it says, Lefima Shikosa, he's raising a question. Was brought down in the Kabbalah, and the Alter Rebbe himself brings down in the first part of Tanya, in chapter 6, that what happens is that the godliness comes down. It's unbridled, and then it has to get bridled, and then it has to be saddled, you might say. So it comes down into this physical world. And it comes down through the creation process until it comes into the world of action. And it goes through within the world of action, there's a whole creation process. As everything is incorporated, inclusive of everything else, so there's an emanation of the world of action, there's a creation of the world of action, there's a formation of the world of action, there's an action of the world of action. And the godliness goes through this process. That then becomes the enlivening force which is responsible for the creation of our world. So that he calls here, according to the Kabbalah, what do we call that? We call it Malchus of Asiya. Elsewhere, we're going to call it Shechina, the godliness that rests here. Elsewhere, we're going to call it Adnai, the godliness which is the boss. It's all the same. It depends which book you're opening, but it's all the same function. Okay, it's the godliness which directly relates to us. And that's where dirt gets to be such a powerful thing, is because what's contained in the dirt, you want to say, listen, it's dirt. It's at the bottom of the creation. There is nothing there. When God created the dirt, that was sort of like, that's it. That's as low as we go. It doesn't go any further. That's like the end, the terminus in the creation. That's as far as the creation process. But what is it that's in that is an expression of Hashem's infiniteness, a true expression of Hashem's infiniteness. We talked about last week. We talked about the introduction in this time that we're talking. And how is it expressed? Because Hashem said that the earth should produce grass, so that it should be able to actually do something. So in other words, why is it that God made dirt? Well, lots of reasons, but a primary reason is for things to grow out of.
Great place to put plants.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, and if you want to get from here to there, walking on a dirt's a lot easier than air, fire, or water.
Trying to walk on the water.
Yes, so, yeah, and like I said, air and fire isn't that much easier, I mean, you know, so.
Yeah.
So that's how it is that, because even though it's only dirt, you know, people don't even pay attention to it. Even though it's only dirt, but it conveys this infinite power that Hashem has been clothed in it. And this is a continual process. It didn't just happen 5,775 years ago, 11 months. Where are we up to? 17 days and 40 minutes and 37 seconds ago.
Yeah.
But timing constantly. Kamayim Yishru at Samayim, as it says, that Yishru Su Hamayim, Umayim Teitza Ha'ariz, Nefesh Chaya, Mechachma Demalchus, Demalchus Desiya. You have other statements that are also made there, also as well. So, for example, to create things that are walking on the ground, so the godliness doesn't have to come down so low. So that means that the godliness isn't as high, therefore, different. Such it's not such a high quality godliness as, say, that's what's in dirt.
Say that again. I missed
the godliness that's in an animal is of a lesser grade godliness than it's in a plant that's in the ground.
It's a lesser, because
it doesn't need to go down so far, so therefore it's not coming from so high.
It's a lesser infinity.
I see. I see.
Yeah, and dirt is actually a very good example, because dirt has such tremendous levels of godliness, but you can't eat dirt.
Right.
Why can't you eat all this godliness? You should just take dirt and stick it in your mouth. And you have all this godliness. And the answer being is, well, we live in a world of klippa, where the godliness is obscured. And in this instance, the godliness is so obscured that our bodies are not capable of extracting this tremendous godliness which has been enclosed in the dirt. We have to do things like stick a plant in it, and that sucks up the minerals from it. And, and then there's things in plants that we can't eat, like the plant fiber per se that we can't eat, that we don't digest. So in order to get any benefit from that part of the plant, what do we have to do? Is we have to let some animal eat that plant, and then the animal is able to digest the fiber. And then whatever comes, whatever of that fiber, now becomes incorporated in the meat of the cow. And then we can eat the cow. So therefore we're getting the benefit of the minerals, we're getting the benefit of the vegetables, and we're also getting the benefit of the animal, as that happens when we eat meat. Shibazayim Abrashis, in the middle of a sentence. Which is this expression of the 6 days of creation, which is illuminating this, it shines in this world. It's a parenthetical statement. And why is all of this happening? Usually we, in Kabbalah, it talks and says that the relationship, the way things work is in a relative relationship. As we need things and as we're extending ourselves, that's how we get things. Mm. Okay, it's like Israel as the Holy Land. Moshe told the Jewish people in Perikof Dal Chafhei of Shmos that these are your borders. But then we're told, you're not going to settle it all at once, because it'll be too difficult to maintain an infrastructure. So therefore, you're going to settle it as you need it. Okay, so that means that what? It says the Rambam talks about Asura Kedushas Sheba Eretz Yisrael. There are 10 levels of holiness. The bottom level is outside of the environs of Jerusalem. And how far does that extend? Until the border of Israel. Once you get to the border of Israel, from that point on, it's called Chutz La'aretz, and there's no holiness there. But if, like for example, there's a provision for expansionism, if they needed to make Israel bigger, so they would conquer land, they would make it part of Israel, and that would extend the holiness as they needed it. So that, and so that's a physical example. So
you're making me nervous now. You're feeling, I'm feeling, I'm worried I'm going to get stuck in Oak Park when the ship comes.
I have the same worry. Yes. Okay. So that. But that talks about for us this relationship that Hashem gives as we need. It says Rambam says that every baby provides a channel for blessing. Mm-hmm. And like I tell people, I couldn't afford 3 kids, so I had 4 more. Right. You know, so what we have to do is we have to excite the Almighty and elicit the Almighty to bring godliness down here. But what started this all off? I mean, talking chicken and egg. So it was Hashem doing it without any impetus from anybody else.
Correct.
It was an expression of unwarranted, unbridled kindness that Hashem even bothered making a creation.
Right. Exactly.
Okay? Without any input from us. But if you really want to know, but then it says, there was input from us, but it was in a primordial state.
But that's after he created.
That's after he created
the thing to get input from.
That was after Olam Machshava, you saw Olam Machshavta. That was after the thought of the Jews came into existence.
Exactly.
Okay. Now, at the end of the parenthesis. Ulatzmiach hasavim ve'alanas v'peres ma'an liyesh tamid midei shana v'shana. And this allows and therefore affects that every single year you get grass and you get trees and you get fruit, which seemingly come from nowhere, especially the weeds on your lawn. It's like, where did they come from? That's definitely a proof of a creation of a something from nothing. That you have this thing suddenly pops up out of the ground. It happens every single year. It's the same thing also with you look at a tree in February, and you could just think it's gone, it's over, it's done.
Yeah.
Okay, but then comes April, May, and the thing comes back, and then if it's a fruit-bearing tree, so then you have by October, at least in Michigan, you have some kind of edible thing going on over there. So this is it happens every single year. The thing basically lies dormant, which is all intents like it's like dead, and it comes back every year.
Right.
Theoretically speaking, how many apples could an apple tree produce?
Infinite.
Yeah, but no, it's an infinite. It's going to? No, Poyle, it's not going to, because an apple tree lives 70, 80 years. It can only produce so many apples. It only does produce so many apples in the course of a season. So, but potentially, I have no idea. But if you want to take, unless you're dealing with, of course, Monsanto seeds or what they do now with sterile trees and whatnot. So, but the seeds, which are inside the apple, will now fall into the ground and they will grow new trees, which will therefore then grow new fruit, which will then fall off and fall into the ground and grow new trees, which will grow new fruit. And that can go on. That process could go on ad infinitum. That's what he says. It's like that's a kind of infinity. And if the world were to exist for tens of thousands of years, you'd still have apples. Because the seeds are gonna come from the fruit, which are gonna make a tree, which is going to make apples, which is going to have these seeds inside the apples, which are gonna make more trees, etc.
Right.
But an apple tree is a bad example, because if you want an apple tree, you have to take the seed, you have to put it into the ground. You have to do something first. That's called the halos man. That means the literal translation, the arousal of the feminine waters. It means that a better translation would be an arousal from below, meaning our effort. So when we exert our effort, then the relationship is Hashem exerts his effort, yeah. Reciprocates. We put a seed in the ground, so the power of growth, which is in the ground, now has an effect on the seed that we put in the ground. Hmm. And he said this before also, Vehema Zroim Netoyim. And those are all the plants the seeds that get planted. Vafel Pikein Henkema Yeshma Ayin. And one of the closest examples we have for a creation of a something from nothing is a seed in the ground. We mentioned this 2 weeks ago also. Shagar and Netayan Ein La Erech Klal Legabe Apri. That you take an apple seed. Okay, it's a little tiny nothing. It doesn't taste good. I think they're poisonous too. Yeah.
Arsenic.
Yeah. Arsenic. Yeah. They're poisonous.
Yeah.
Okay, so you even shouldn't eat them. And you take this thing and you put it in the ground, and what do you get? You get something that tastes really good. So there's no real comparability between the seed and the apple. So for sure, he says, and for sure not with the tree. With the branches, with the leaves. And it's an amazing thing. There's even poems been written about it, you know. Anything is seen as something as amazing as a tree, yeah, you know, so that from this little apple seed is going to come an apple tree with all the branches and the bark and the leaves and all the apples that are going to come from it. And the amount that you get from this little tiny seed is really, you could say, is incomparable to the seed itself. And talking quantitative production coming from this one seed.
Right.
And it's specifically more so when we talk about the idea that the seed has to rot before it can grow, so it falls away and becomes absolutely nothing in the ground. So this apple seed germ from whence the tree is growing is just a small little fleck. And from that small little fleck, you get all the apples you could eat. V'kein b'mine zera'inim v'yarakis gam b'mine tavuol hishavus me'ez geronim megaron echad. And he says this goes right across with vegetables, with all kinds of plants, and it's really amazing. As a wheat stalk, you take a wheat berry, you stick it in the ground, you get a plant that has thousands of wheat berries. V'hukumo yesh ma'ayin. He says, and that's an example for a creation of a something from nothing, because you're really starting with... It's not really, because you're starting with a little something, but it's a really little tiny something.
Right.
And from it, you get a really big something, which in looking at the germ of an apple seed, and looking at the tree, you're not going to discern any similarities whatsoever. Under a microscope, okay, you could say that this is the composite of an apple tree, sure, but not a whole lot. Umekoshikain hakashuyin hakashin rashibolim vehene perish al yedei halos man. So it's the stalks and the he says no way comparable compared to the berries and the wheat, and how much more so with the stalk and with the chaff and all that other stuff there. That all happens through halas man, and the halas man, which means the reciprocal relation that we go first, is with us sticking the seed in the ground. And how does this all happen? Is because there's an interaction with our exertion, which is putting the seed in the ground, with the power of growth, which Hashem stuck in the ground, naskel hamshachas iris el yainim abia. That a base. Nashviel comes up. Shehu tachlis brias ha'adam kosher machamacher. And this now, so you have all different derivations of the higher levels of godliness, which this is the whole reason why we were created in the first place. In other words, it says Adam was put in the world, he was put in the garden to work it and to keep it, meaning that even though it was like the best place possible on earth at the time, it was called Gan Eden, which we translate as paradise, But Adam was put in the garden to work it and to guard it. That means that there was stuff needed to be done. Hashem created an imperfect world with the idea being that we would perfect it. How's that working? And that we have then, through our efforts, the little bit that we do is able to accomplish great accomplishments. And we had an example for this back in Agaris HaTshuva when he talks about doing tshuva here. Okay, so what is it, how? It says that a person does tshuva over here. A little bit of tshuva goes a long way. Like he talks about in the Gemara. It says that a person should accept affliction with love, because by doing so, it says your children will have long life. So Gemara Brachas. Okay, what's the deal? So what are those afflictions with love, and how do they help? So afflictions with love are, for example, you put your hand in your left pocket to take out your wallet, and there's no wallet in your left pocket. But you put your hand in your right hand in your right pocket, and that's where your wallet is. So that panic moment that the person had, where's my wallet, it says, saves a person from a tremendous amount of punishment afterwards, after the soul has departed from the world. And the Alter Rebbe says, how is that possible? He gives the example of sticking a stick in the ground and casting a shadow. He says, you take a stick, and you put it in the ground. What has to happen with the earth and the sun in order for that stick to move a couple inches?
Thousands of miles.
The sun and earth have to move thousands of miles.
Hundreds of thousands.
Yeah, to get that little thing. So we see that down here in this physical world, you do a little bit. So if that's tshuva, for example, like teshuvah, it's going to be tshuva with any good thing that you do. And a good thing, by the way, also fits into the other way the other Rebbe describes it. A good thing would be also refraining from doing something wrong. It is also considered a good thing. Okay, and in fact, the Alter Rebbe says that, he said this in chapter 25, that the... it's even better that a person not to do something wrong than to do something right in this aspect, as far as the effect that it has on the world, because when you're not eating pork, how much pork are you not eating?
Only all of it.
When you're putting on tefillin, so you have them on at a certain time, a certain space, so you only get whatever it's the godliness that comes down is only in relationship to how much tefillin you put on. For how long, how much. So and that's true with our relationship entirely with Hashem. Anytime we exert a little tiny effort in whatever it is in helping and making the world a better place, so Hashem comes down with full force. The Gemara says that Hashem says, you open yourself up like the size of the pinhole, and Hashem will open himself up like the size of the gates of the Beis HaMikdash. Of course, that's figurative speaking. We can talk about why specifically the Beis HaMikdash. You could say you might open it up as much as the Grand Canyon or as big as a mountain or whatever. No, it's just the Beis HaMikdash because, you know, we want to indicate the idea of sanctity there. But the gates of the Beis HaMikdash were 60 cubits wide, which is 90 feet. So one pinhole you do, Hashem does 90 feet. You do two pinholes, Hashem does 180 feet, etc., etc. So it's when you'd be looking at the area of a pinhole compared to this 90 feet, okay, so there is a point of comparison. A pinhole is, 1/64th of an inch wide. And so 90 feet is going to be 90 times 12 times 64 times the size of that pinhole. So you can say it is. There's a point of comparability, but not when you're just casually looking at it. So that's why it says that you do a little bit. I mean, for Hashem, you do a little bit, and Hashem takes over. Hashem does more. But what is Hashem waiting for? We have to stick out our foot first. Hashem's not going to push our foot. That's up to us. we have to say, okay, I'm taking the first step, and after that, Hashem says, okay, now I'll put you on a trolley and carry you. That then fulfills our purpose of being here, making the world a better place. Oh, we got time. Huh. We might actually finish, because this is easy. With this, we can understand why it is that there's this pecking order of inanimate plant, animal, and people. That just as there are four kingdoms, as we just mentioned, so too there are four basic elements of earth, water, fire, and air. And it's interesting that he says that it's earth, water, fire, and air, and not earth, water, air, and fire, which is normally how we would do it, because there is actually a discussion, I think the Rambam actually brings it down in the beginning of the Rambam, that the which is higher, which is on top, you might say. Is fire on top of air? Is air on top of fire? So according to one opinion, the air is a more sublime thing, because you could see a fire, but you can't see air. I mean, fire has no mass.
Right.
Air has mass.
Mm-hmm.
Air does.
Air has mass, but you can't see it. You can see a fire.
Only in L.A.
You can see a fire, yeah. If you're in Western Washington, yeah, you can see the air. If you're in New York City on any right. given day in the summertime, right. you can see the air. Okay, fine.
Yeah.
But the... so that's why he switches it around over to take into consideration that opinion that air is higher than... is a more subtle element than fire. That even though an animal is in a higher kingdom than a plant, and a person on a higher level than an animal, this is as we said before, this is led into this. Animals eat plants, and they're quite healthy about it. And people eat plants and animals. And that's how we get our life force.
Right.
Because our bodies are not fine-tuned enough to be able to derive the plant nutrients per se, or all the plant nutrients that are the cow has ingested, and therefore we have to ingest plants as well. Okay, the whole process of biology, how it happens, basically, I don't know. I'm not a biologist. But the plants that the animal eats gets converted and becomes meat. Such as there's, for example, there is no fiber in meat, whereas lots of fiber in plant. And this has then the what level is it that is contained in these, in the animal and in the plant? So in the animal is the divine level of das. In the plant is the divine level of wisdom. As it says that a child doesn't know who its father is until it eats plant material, meaning the first thing that usually kids eat, and little babies eat, is wheat, farina, mush, some kind of something like that. Nice. And that then contributes to the intellectual development of the child, such that an infant that eats grain will be able to recognize its father as being his father, not just some face, which is what the child thinks until they get to that point. Oh, here's another face. Mm-hmm. It's smiling at me so I can smile back, but it doesn't recognize this as being, oh, I have a relationship with this person. Mm-hmm. Whereas opposed to mom is right away. But the kid hasn't eaten meat yet, but it's eaten, doesn't need to at this point. It's eaten plant life, and the plant is providing enough intellectual development of the brain.
Mm-hmm.
And this now is referred to as the Or Chozer, means that we're able to elevate, what we're able to accomplish from the very lowest levels of godliness which are revealed here. And what we do when we utilize physical things in making the world a better place, so we release the godliness that's in that physical thing, because it's now been used for a godly purpose, and it makes the world a better place. There's more revelation of God down here in this world.
Revelation.
Ultimately, that's why we're here, and ultimately that'll be realized when Mashiach comes. Another GPS coordinate, that this godliness that now comes down, for example, in the utilization of a physical object, causes a level of divine will to be injected into the world that wasn't here till now. The creation processes by step, godliness has to fit into every step of the way, and as the steps get more defined, the godliness becomes more diminuted. That's true, except as he says in, I want to say chapter 43, don't quote me on it, that by a person takes a physical object and uses it for a mitzvah, what they're doing is actually rerouting the godliness coming into it. You have a citron. The citron gets its godliness through channels, until it comes down in a very diminuted form. But for 1 week out of the year, that citron has now been converted into an esrog, and the godliness that's coming into and enlivening the esrog is coming from a level of godliness which conveys the divine will of Hashem. We can understand it. Why do we do commandments? Those are things that Hashem wants us to do. So for that week, Esrog is a very interesting example. Because if you take a cowhide and you put it in a press and you start making tefillin, so that remains holy forever. Whereas with an Esrog, well, before Sukkos you could eat it, after Sukkos you could, you know, make a besamim cushion out of it or whatever it is. But during the week of Sukkos, you're not allowed to have any benefit from it, because mitzvahs are not given for our benefit, they're there for us to do. And during that week, we've unplugged the channels by which are enlivening this piece of fruit, and during the week of Sukkos, we're circumventing, and totally going around, doing a whole end round around the creation process, such that this esrog is now getting its life force from divine will straight. Not divine will as it's going through the process, but the divine will straight. We're going to finish it. I lied. We're going to finish it this week. Now we'll really understand, hopefully, considering at this point when I turn the page and it says, and now you understand really well, my eye always catches the last words of the letter, which are little tiny words that say, Ad kam etzinu meguf ksavyat kotshei. It says, this is all we have of this letter, which means that there's more of the letter that we don't have.
Right.
So it's just like, Well, what do I understand at this point? You see, for example, the effect that we have in Yechezkel's and Ezekiel's chariot. So he sees the animals pulling the chariot, flying by the sky. And one of them is a bird and one of them is an ox. And what happens is, if we take a bird, like a pigeon or a turtle dove, or we take an ox, a sheep, or a goat, and we offer them as sacrifices on the altar, So the godliness which is enlivening that animal, either the bird or the mammal or the mammals, is now elevated so that it gives a charge to the animals that are pulling the chariot. In other words, they're dependent. Those animals don't sit and graze. There's no, the Yecheskel didn't say anything about grass up there. He talked about wheels and chariots and people riding it and what the animal looked like, what their hoofs were like, what their horns were like, what their body was like. Great detail. He didn't say anything about grass. They never stopped to eat. He said they're running back and forth constantly. Okay, so that the... So how is it that they get their energy to go running back and forth? Comes from us. Because when we do something along the lines which that relates specifically to the eagle or the ox, so that gives, that elevates the vitality of whatever it is. He uses, for example, the word karbanos. So when you offer up two turtle doves on the altar, so that elevates the godliness which had to come down through the process all the way into that little bird. And then when it's sacrificed on the altar, it now releases it, and that vitality, that godliness, now ascends, and it gives a charge to the source of that bird, which is the face of the eagle. But it doesn't stop there, by the way. Because the face of the eagle is an expression of Raphael HaMalach, which the eagle is in Yetzirah and formation. Raphael is the same thing, variation of a single thing, but only in the world of creation. You're wondering what's the connection between Raphael and eagles? Yeah?
I was wondering.
So, the... it says that an eagle has, the way it's described, I think it's a Medrash, Rashi brings it down to Chumash, that an eagle has Rachmanis on its young, by carrying it on its back. The idea of Rachmanis is Tiferes, that's what Raphael's into. That's his whole thing. The idea of healing, the angel of healing, is Rachmanis. So it's a single expression of divine compassion.
Can I assume? That's a very dangerous statement.
But you can do anything you want.
Yeah, for sure. Exactly. But based on the conversation here, it seems as though. I mean, it's not just limited. The discussion
it's everything.
Here, yeah. It's not just limited to the sacrifice.
Not just that bird and sacrificing.
Right.
It's everything
it's
that you're
anything
going
that
to do.
You physically
correct.
Involved with in this world, if
is
you
going
if
to,
you use it out
right.
in some methodology of effort toward godliness, you affect this
correct.
This way.
Okay. Correct.
That's why
we've heard this before. Right. I don't know if correct. We did it like a week or two ago.
Right.
That the Mezuzah Magid yes. explained the expression Da Masha L'mayla Mechad. Know that which is above you. It's on the. Did we talk about this recently? No. So it's talk that's written on many, many shtenders and bimas, and shuls, as a source of inspiration. When a person's davening, they should know that which is above them. Okay, you're not just standing there and talking in a void when you're in shul davening. You're standing in front of Hashem.
Right.
The Mezuzah Magid interpreted it differently. By just changing the punctuation, duh, you should know. Ma la mile, not duh, duh. It's not D-U-H, it's Daladayan. You should know. Ma la mile, that which is above, semicolon, mimcha, is from you.
Right.
Meaning that the whole entire spectrum of creation
depends on
what we do.
Right.
That's the difference between the outlook. That's how the Ramchal presents it in Mesilas Yesharim, the path of the just. He goes into this whole big long discussion about Kabbalah and creation and godliness, and then in the end he says, "And look all the things that you muck up when you do stuff wrong." Okay, so the Alter Rebbe is not into that. The Alter Rebbe is emphasizing you'll do the right thing, and you'll elevate the right things, and you utilize the things always for the right time, right purpose, and then you, what you'll do is you will elevate the world.
Right.
It's a big difference from that approach and the Ramchal's approach.
Yeah.
We have a responsibility of elevating the world. That's where the emphasis is. If you keep elevating the world, you have to worry about what happens if you muck up, because you won't muck up, you just keep elevating the world. Says after this whole long explanation, it will now be easy to understand. If parenthetical statement, if you're the Alter Rebbe, al yedei kol hanal, through all that we mentioned before, gadol miles hamitzvos ma'asiyos, how great it is to actually accomplish by doing the mitzvahs here. And this is the only realm in the creation where you can do mitzvahs.
Where it can be done, right.
Good. Mashiach is going to come today, and there's going to be a lot of people that are going to go, oh, crow. No. Why? Because when Mashiach comes, it's like that proctor who says, pencils down.
Exactly.
The more opportunity. And you got five questions left, and you know the answers.
Right.
Okay, pencils down. It's like, oh, wait. Okay, we stop accomplishing at that point.
Right.
Whatever we've achieved when Mashiach comes, that's where we stay forever. So a lot of people are going to be, wait a minute, I realize now I should have done a whole lot more. So, too late, got to do it now. That the whole reason, that doing, performing mitzvahs is the whole reason why the soul comes into a physical body. Because if we're here just to love God, you can do that without your body. What do you think the soul's doing up in Gan Eden before it comes down, after it goes up? It's sitting there loving God. You don't need a body to love God.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but to accomplish that, you need a physical world, your physical body. As it says, today you do them, tomorrow you get reward, but today's when you got to do. And it's a whole lot better to have 1 hour in this world of accomplishment with tshuva and ma'asim tovim than all the reward that a person gets in the world to come. As he said in chapter 4, because how much reward you get is just based on how much you appreciate. And even a neshama without a body can only appreciate so much of Hashem, because Hashem is infinitely more than whatever it is, however great a soul can appreciate. There's a whole more, and there's a whole
limits or
a
limits.
Whole and infinity beyond that.
Yeah, limits or limits.
And the neshama can't put on tefillin.
Nope, can't do any of that. So with this we have finished chapter 21. Ad kan matzina b'zut miksav yad kodshay. This is all we have of this letter in existence.
It says in the commentary, the grandson, the Menachem Mendel, writes his grandfather wrote this discourse a few days before his passing.
Uh huh. Okay.
So it's not, they didn't lose anything. It was, he was.
That's as far as he got in the letter.
As far as he got.
Yeah. Okay, but it doesn't say who he was sending it to. Because I've always wanted to know the backstory on it. Yeah, no, his last will and testament.
Match up for some.
Wait, so yeah. This is the last